announcing the What is RevOps Handbook, the only guide you will need to learn how to accelerate your sales cycle, improve win rates, and create a predictable revenue model. Learn how to establish a revenue operations team, grow a revenue machine, and how to measure success, all within the What is RevOps Handbook. Head to evster.com/what-is-revops or click the link in the description below to grab your copy today. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales ops onto the show to deconstruct the what, why, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Evster, a revenue intelligence platform used to identify risk in the pipeline and score customer engagement, and is sponsored by the Global Sales Operations Association and the UK Revenue Operations Network. Hello, and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Lance Thompson, who is currently the Technical Sales Operations Manager at Seekout. Lance, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And I must also, of course, introduce my beautiful co-host, Alex, who's here to ask the more technical questions.
Daunting being called beautiful by you, Tom.
Lance, let's get straight into this. I want to understand how you entered into the world of sales operations.
Yep. Do you want the story from the beginning or the condensed version?
Let's go from the beginning, and I'll jump in if it's too non-condensed. Okay.
Yep. Coming out of college in the dot-com era, my first role was as a sales coordinator, and one of the main things I had to do within that role was become an expert on the CRM system we had at the time. Probably nobody's heard of it. It was called Maximizer. It was the 90s, and it didn't work very well. But as getting into that role, really understanding how that worked and how to get information out of it is kind of how I first got a foothold in my first job. Being able to show the marketing team and the sales team what was working and what wasn't right away kind of then got me promoted at the time into a marketing events role. And so from there, we went through a buyout and it failed. The dot-com crashed and eventually we were all laid off. And with marketing experience at the time, the market wasn't very good for somebody just barely out of college to get into marketing. And so kind of pivoted over to sales because that's where the opportunities were. And then ended up doing that for a solid dozen years at various different SaaS companies. Enjoyed it for a while, but eventually I was getting burned out as I was going to places that start off in kind of a consultative sales process, but would eventually just try to get one call closes where you're just calling people and trying to get them to sign up whether they're a fit or not. And so when, fast forward to 2013, when I left the last sales job, was thinking of getting into something else. And my wife was a Salesforce administrator and sales operations person at the time and thought that I'd be interested in becoming a Salesforce administrator. And so looked into it, and I liked the analytical side of it. Took the class that's a week long from them and studied up on the architecture. I'd already used it as a sales rep. And a lot of times I'd have territories that weren't that strong. And so I got pretty savvy in reports just to find people to call all the time. And studied up for the certification. And then right as I passed that, I had an opportunity to join Impinj as their first sales operations, or the first sales administrator that's full-time, but part of the sales operations team. And so at the time, we were about 100 people there. And we were able to grow and go through an IPO. And being part of the sales operations team, you're basically right in the thick of the business. And so everything I was setting up, was to make things easier for the sales team, but also had in mind how you're setting up the reporting and structure for the entire company. And as companies get bigger, that Salesforce admin function eventually kind of moves to the IT team. And so there's always the balance of whether you kind of move over to IT and are just responding to tickets, developing things, and kind of doing Salesforce admin stuff full time, or whether it kind of you stay with the sales operations side and are doing some of the sales admin stuff, as well as all the other things that go into sales ops. And so then I was approached by Scott Franklin over at Igneous. And this was basically right at the time they were starting the sales operation after 3 years of being stealth. And I really liked the opportunity to come in and start things from the beginning. At a company that big, you're not just doing the Salesforce administrator things. You're basically doing all of sales operations. So it's more well-rounded. And so from there, we basically got to set up the processes straight from the beginning, work closely with marketing on lead scoring, everything through the entire process from acquisition of somebody who hears who you are all the way through to sales and having a lifelong customer. And I really liked how well-rounded that is. And I really like being at small companies. And so that's kind of where my career has gone. And then most recently, I think we didn't quite make it far enough at Igneous. And so that the company shut down. But then right as that was happening, it was being reached out to by Ed, who was one of the people early on who helped bring me into Igneous. He's now over at Seekout as the customer success manager. And they have a similar role. They're further along than we were at Igneous. They're probably a year or two ahead, but they've had success and they're right at a period of growth. They have a lot of systems they've kind of set up, but haven't really tied together to get the full reporting structure all the way across. And so they basically brought me in to help combine all the systems together to get the reporting in check and get the processes in check as we kind of go through the next phase there. And I've been there about a month and a half, and there's a lot to do, but it's a great challenge and looking forward to it.
Alance's story. Thank you for the journey that you've been on. I thought it was quite interesting. The lack of opportunities in marketing drove you over to sales, which I think is probably a good thing in the long term. Talking about the systems you've been brought in to manage, could you quickly, just for the benefit of the audience, just list out the core parts of the tech stack that you guys are currently running?
Okay. On the marketing side, we start with HubSpot, and that feeds into Salesforce. We have Intercom for chat. We're starting to implement a Plan Hat as well for customer success stats, and we're also kind of partway through implementing SaaS Optics, and also just started implementing Zendesk as well. And then the SDR and sales team also uses Outreach as part of their sales process as well.
Got it. And then also, just so we understand the structure of the sales team, how many reps, how many people in the sales ops function, just so we have a better understanding of the sales landscape at Seekout.
Okay. On the sales side, I don't know if I can get into exact numbers, but it's around like 12 to 25 people. And we have a couple people in sales ops, and there's about 4 or 5 people in marketing.
Awesome. And the other person in sales ops, are they, like, do you manage them, or do they manage you? What is their role?
I I manage somebody who is really, really great at analysis. He's a couple years out of college, but has a bright future. And he's been running a lot of numbers all over the place, doing a lot of analysis and doing a great job.
Amazing. Should we give him a quick shout out? What's his name?
Oh yeah, his name is Michael Krebs.
Shout out to Michael, doing some great analysis. I'm going to pick up a question here that we found actually mentioned on your LinkedIn profile. So at Impinj, you talk about the multiple different software packages and kind of supposedly streamlining them together to add value to the business. Was there a specific tool there that did work particularly well, or was it a combination of tools that added that value? Could you share a bit more about that experience?
It was a combination of tools. Their instance started in 2008, and so there were a lot of things already there. They were one of the first people to implement Steelbrick, which is now the CPQ, the sales function. And so it worked pretty well, but it was so far before what the CPQ is now that we had to, a lot of things we added by hand or customized were things that they added on later. And so it's kind of a different version than what we had before. We implemented Clary there, which we were pretty early in implementing that as well, but that was great for forecasting. And that does a better job in Salesforce of getting historical information, of getting snapshots along the way. And especially all the executives would geek out at how easy it was to create dashboards in it. So that was pretty handy. I implemented Exactly. It was kind of the first project I was thrown when I got there, which is handy for tracking compensation software. Our process became a beast as we grew. And one thing I learned there was to better, that I could have managed that better there to create better processes, because the process when it started of, you know, calculating 5 plans for 30 people didn't work as well when it was like 15 plans for 75 people. We basically let too much complexity build in over time rather than kind of stop that complexity as it went. And there were, it worked well overall. There were just too many rooms for errors in or too many places where you can make an error along the way in that whole process we had there.
Awesome. Touching, you know, going back to the forecasting point you mentioned, do you think it is possible, or how possible is it to create a truly accurate forecast?
It's a great question. It's something you always have to hone in. You have the forecast. You start with the basic assumptions of these are the probabilities at these stages, and you really see sales managers get really good at asking the right questions of you're really confident on this deal, but what are the steps that you've taken and haven't taken yet in the deals that we've closed? Usually at this point we've already involved decision makers or procurement or anybody like that. What are the steps that are missing? And then as we got into the more challenges of this last year, you also had to adjust what are the steps that are now in place now this year that weren't in place last year. Is there now the CFO is going to come in and be a final decision maker where in a normal year he's not? And so I'd say it's always a constant battle to make sure you're asking the right questions, looking at the right factors, and always reevaluating all the assumptions you're making along the way to be accurate on those forecasts.
And just to follow up, how do you handle the different stakeholders? How do you sort of make sure that the right people on the deal? Have you had sort of plans and processes to ensure people are keeping that, you know, the account reach out broad?
Yeah, that's a great question. You always have to make sure that you're learning from what you do, and kind of reviewing both when things went well and things went bad, whether whether that's speaking with the sales managers about how they came to their conclusions and what questions we all asked along the way. And then it's also learning from the deals that did do well to say what was the piece in this deal that led us to know when it was going to close, know the key steps, anticipate things we didn't think of along the way. And so I'd say it's basically always asking the questions and following up on those.
Yeah, it makes sense. I certainly know as a tile I've created in sort of one of our demo environments to show engagement with different stakeholders via contact roles, and everyone loves it, but the reality is no one uses contact roles properly. So yep. It's how we can do that in different ways. But I just wondered if there was any, you had any kind of insight there, because I know that's something almost everyone I talk to, they struggle to kind of capture that information in the way they'd like.
Yeah, luckily Salesforce is finally allowing you to do more automation with contact roles. So now you can set the contact roles directly on the opportunity and kind of use Process Builder and Flow to kick them off to the contact roles, and do the same if you add the contact roles, then if you have a corresponding field on the opportunity, to put them there as well. So that's something I had just set up recently at another company as well.
Awesome. Now, I believe that you're at a stage of the end or the beginning of the next fiscal year where you're deciding on KPIs to track. Mm-hmm. Could you, if possible, share a couple of those that you're considering focusing on for the next fiscal year?
Yeah. We're a couple of ways away from our SKO at this point. So we haven't done a deep dive into those, but the key ones we're tracking so far are the annual revenue, or the ARR. That's kind of the main one. We look closely at churn as well, to make sure that we're keeping that as low as possible. And as part of this, we're looking at segments as well, as the Seekout product is useful for both really large companies as well as small recruiters. But those businesses act differently along the way. And so we're looking closely at different segments for like recruiter, SMB, mid-market, as well as enterprise in everything we're looking at as well. And so we'll be kind of taking a close dive into those. And then along the journey, we'll be looking closely at the KPIs of, you know, how many leads we're creating, how many of those are converting, if we're getting stuck in certain places, what the net retention rate is for our existing customers, how much expansion do we get, making sure that we're always getting more expansions than downturns and loss and things like that. So I think those are the main things that we're going to be focusing on.
Awesome. And then our second or our penultimate question is, who in the world of sales operations, or actually not in the world of sales operations, has taught you the most? So they don't have to be from sales ops, they could be from some other field, but taught you the most about sales operations, I should add as well.
The most about sales operations. I'd say the most about sales operations was probably Alex Long. He was my one of the directors I had when I was at Impinj, and he really really focuses in a lot on strategy, and he has a broad range of experience. He came from being a tech support person to getting into sales and then operations and strategy. So he has a lot of perspective across the business, both in working people as well as general business strategy and things like that. And so it's definitely learned a lot from him. And he's always a person that really focuses a lot on career development as he goes along, kind of more so than others I've seen. Usually you're kind of focused on the task at hand when you're speaking. He's always thinking ahead to what's going on in your career and where you want to go. And so he was usually thinking about it more than I was.
Awesome. And then finally, who in the world of sales ops would you most like to take for lunch?
Yeah, there's a lot of people you could take for lunch. Usually I'm taking my wife for lunch. She was in sales and marketing operations long before I was. And she's kind of transitioned out to be more of a technical writer now. But because she has all that experience, most of her, a lot of her clients are in that space. And so she's still closely involved in it.
Can we give a quick shout out to the wife?
Oh, yep. She's Kamala Thompson.
Shout out to Kamala. Amazing. That was, thank you for sharing so much about the current operation and about previous operations, Lance. I think it was an eye-opening session. Interestingly, the first person we've had on with the word technical in their sales ops job title. And I think I wasn't 100% sure pre-interview what that really meant, but I think during the past 20 minutes or so, it makes more sense that the distinction between someone who would be in technical sales operations. Actually, this can be a final question we can put to you, Lance. What would you say is the core differentiator of someone who is in technical sales operations versus just normal sales operations?
Well, I'd say, and I kind of saw this as something that as I was starting to look for a job, noticed is common for early companies. They need somebody with both the experience to set up the business operations, but also the ability to kind of go in and do the technical work within the systems to tie everything together. And so I think that's where it came from. Honestly, we didn't talk title too much, so I don't even know what my exact title is. That was just one of the things I saw at one point. So when I had to put a title down, that's what I wrote down.
Yeah, fair enough.
So it could be my title.
That makes total sense, though. That early stage where you might not have a dedicated Salesforce admin, you may need the sales ops person to actually go in and do the stuff. So that makes total sense. Lance, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It was great to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.